Hello, and welcome to the Fast Fill. Fast Fill is a podcast series sponsored by Natural Gas Vehicles for America, the national organization dedicated to the development of a growing, profitable, and sustainable marketplace for vehicles powered by natural gas and biomethane, and for promoting the use of more natural gas in transportation. I'm your host, Dan Gage, president of NGV America. In this episode of the Fast Fill, we'll begin to share presentations from NGV 21, our annual meeting and industry summit held recently in Phoenix, Arizona. We dedicated this episode to a presentation from Jim Arthurs, NGV America's 2021 chairman, who shared these remarks to frame the start of our three-day conference. In his presentation, Jim covers some important ground, from resource extraction to component sourcing, to battery production and vehicle assembly, to scalable deployment and vehicle recharging. What would an all-electric transport future look like? And if hydrogen is a more likely long-term outcome, how do very real barriers associated with fuel access and affordability impact its adoption? And while more and more fleets looking to ditch diesel convert to natural gas vehicles increasingly fueled with renewable natural gas, how does our industry convince regulators and policymakers that natural gas is a now solution with greater emissions reductions benefits than any other option? You'll note that our audio begins as Jim takes the NGV 21 stage, but then we've edited out a small portion that was dedicated to our annual meeting. His audio picks back up again as the annual meeting section closes. Jim?
Thank you, sir.
Good morning, everybody. Okay, thank you, Mitch. It is great to be here, to be with people, to have a bunch of folks to talk to in person, and for me, and I'm sure for some of you, today is the first day I've worn a suit in a year and a half, and by that I mean including the pants. So that's awesome. I've got two tasks to do this morning. One is to conduct our annual meeting, which we're going to do very quickly, and then I've got some comments that are going to really link up with what Mitch just talked about. So the first thing to do here is to call our 33rd annual meeting to order. So good morning and welcome to that. I'm Jim Arthurs, chairman. I'm going to just go through this script really fast. Thank you for the efforts, making the effort to be here today. We appreciate your participation. We'll begin with a short annual meeting, and then we'll get on with our industry summit. So I asked Dan, okay, I'm going to do the opening comments. What would you like me to cover? And he gave me this big, long list of things to do, and I said, how long do you have? And he said, well, maybe 10 minutes. So I'll make it quick. This is our pledge that we put together as the pledge from NGV America. We do believe that climate is changing. We believe the transportation sector can be cleaner and decarbonized. Time is of the essence. And importantly, renewable natural gas provides an affordable pathway to that, much as Mitch just told us. What's driving this push to electric vehicles? This is all you hear about these days. Everything's got to be all electric. And we're seeing it in regulatory action. We're seeing it in, you know, what's happening with consumer behavior, what's happening with companies. And a big trend is on this ESG movement that's really an investor-led there. Thanks. It's really an investor-led pressure on public companies to understand what is the effect of climate change on their companies and how are they mitigating their emissions. And to give you some numbers, there's about 50 trillion dollars that's being managed by professional investment funds. Of that, about a third of them, 17 trillion, have an ESG mandate in their decisions around what companies to invest in. We recently saw with Exxon some of these activist companies actually elect two members of the board of Exxon against the company's wishes that are saying, you know, your ESG mandate is not strong enough. And so we're seeing a lot of investor activism. Since 2010, private equity's put about $1.2 trillion into energy. So that's about double the market cap of Exxon, Shell, and Chevron combined that these companies are really, you know, pushing on energy. So that, to me, is one that the regulatory part is really strong, but I think we're going to see more and more of an investor-led sentiment around pushing on ESG, and they all think that EVs are the answer. And really, unfortunately, that's not the case, as Mitch said. If you look at the state of trucks today, so if you wanted to go buy a heavy-duty electric truck, these are the choices you have, and you can see that there's a little problem with the range in that they don't go, you know, you can't really drive one of those for a day, and so how really effective is it for an over-the-road highway truck? And, of course, the price is around three times, you know, what a diesel truck would cost. So we're really, really in the early days. Now, personally, I believe that the truck OEMs that are our customers at Westport are going to solve some of these problems. And by the end of this decade, we will have trucks that go twice as far. The battery density will be twice as high, and we'll start to have real products. But today, we don't. And I think everybody sort of acknowledges that. But just for, you know, for interest, I said, okay, well, what does this look like? What does an all-electric truck future look like? And so if you take Volvo, for example, who's probably the greenest of the truck OEMs right now, and what they said at ACT Expo was they think 35% of their trucks will be electric by 2030 and 100% by 2040. So just kind of map that out and say, okay, let's assume that that is the case. That actually does happen. Then what happens to the heavy-duty truck fleet is you can see the diesel, which is in gray, and I ignored the natural gas trucks we have in there just to keep it simple. But basically what happens is you have this growth in electric, you have a decline in diesel, and by 2046, basically the diesel trucks are out of the fleet. And your greenhouse gas reduction really follows that growth of the electric. So you get to zero carbon trucking by about 2046. So, interesting, let's just do that. Well, what do you need to do that? And these numbers are along the same lines of what Mitch just said, but, you know, 160 gigawatt hours a year of battery production. So the Tesla Gigafactory that's famously, you know, the biggest plant in the world does about 20. So you need eight of those. 230 gigawatts of electricity. And it's not just the generation, it's the transmission, it's the battery storage and the charging, all of that. You know, that's around 20% of the current, this isn't U.S., this is the current U.S. capacity. So you just have to add 20% to everything, including battery storage, because if it's clean electricity, the sun doesn't shine at night. Huge supplies of copper, lithium, cobalt, and so on. I'll give you an interesting statistic here. So a Tesla battery weighs about 1,000 pounds, so 100 kilowatt hour battery, weighs about 1,000 pounds. To make that, and they have lithium, cobalt, nickel, graphite, and copper. To get that 1,000 pounds of highly processed metal, you need to process 90,000 pounds of ore. And to get that 90,000 pounds of ore, you have to move 500,000 pounds of earth, roughly. So it's 500,000 pounds of rocks getting dragged around to make one battery for a car. Truck batteries are 5, 7, 8 times larger. So imagine the effect, the amount of mining you need to do and the effect that has. We need huge investments, obviously, but also more experience. We really haven't run electric trucks much at all. The Daimler fleet has hit 1 million miles now, just recently announced that. I mean, we do 1 million miles almost a day on natural gas trucks today. But we don't have experience with operations maintenance. You know, how long do these trucks really last before the batteries need to be replaced? What about fire safety? You know, we hear about Teslas, you know, catching on fire and it being a real nasty fire. Well, what's going to happen when you have a truck that has a battery 6 times larger carrying a load of, you know, dangerous materials and there's a fire? We don't have any experience with that yet. So lots to be done. And then lastly, I'll say political will. This is expensive, and while it's easy for politicians to say they want to do this, when it comes time to approving the bill, it's hard to get that done. And we've seen just today, or not today, but this past couple of weeks, you know, there's one senator who's, standing in way of the bill to clean up the electric grid. He happens to be from a coal-producing state, so it's understandable, but one senator can stand in the way. So political will is going to be a real challenge. This is going to take some gutsy calls. Changing the grid is a big, big deal. And I like to look at where are we today? So let me walk you through this slide. This is actually from the Energy Information Administration. So this is an official U.S. government slide. And by the way, I see someone taking pictures. The slides will be available to you, so no worries. So 93 quadrillion BTUs is the current production, 34% from natural gas, 35% from petroleum, 12% renewables. That includes hydro and wind and so on. 10% still coal and 9% nuclear. So that's what we're producing in the U.S. in 2020. The consumption, so about a quarter of it goes to transportation. That's where most of the petroleum goes, a little more than a quarter to industrial, and it's kind of got a mixture of things. Residential is 12 and commercial is 9, and call it 70 quadrillion BTUs of consumption. Now, you kind of go, well, hang on, we're producing 93 and we're consuming 70, so we seem to be short by a bit. What's happening? Well, here's what happens. 38% of that primary energy goes into generating electricity. And so there's 35.7 quadrillion BTUs of electricity generated. But when you run it through the electric grid, you lose two-thirds of that power to heat and all the losses in the grid. So you're putting in 38% of your energy and you're getting out 13% that actually makes it to customers. So now look at this picture and say, so let's understand what we want to do. We want to get rid of the blue and the brown and the gray coal. We want to get rid of all of that stuff and generate electricity with renewables and then run it all through this grid where you put in a dollar's worth of energy and you get a 30 cents out. And then, you know, move all that into transportation, industrial, and so on. And, you know, there's a huge, massive infrastructure in place to move all this energy around. And you want to basically take that green and just make that whole thing green. How realistic is that going to happen in the next 20 years? You know, to me, it's beyond any kind of, you know, reasonability that will actually happen. And when you look at it on a global basis, this is from the International Energy Agency, who, you know, does a lot of good work around what is the future going to look like. And you look at this and say, okay, so 2020, we've got oil, 1.2 trillion of the energy market, and clean energy, you know, a tenth of that. And they're saying, you know what, by 2030, we're going to increase clean energy by a factor of 5 or 6, and drop oil by a third, and eventually drop oil by 90%, and only use oil to make things like plastics. The thing that's missing is, well, who's going to make this happen? Because you're talking multiple countries, you're talking about companies, you know, and there's oil companies that are going to fight against this. There's countries like Saudi Arabia that are going to fight hard against this. So it's not something you can just legislate to make happen. You know, this is commerce. This is businesses that will be fighting for their share. And, you know, this picture to me, again, looks really, really improbable to do in essentially 30 years. So, so if you look at this, yeah, 5 times increase. If you look at this, 50% of the energy market is batteries. Imagine all the mining you need to do to make that much, and how much environmental disruption that's going to cause. How are we going to fund it in developing nations? This is an interesting one. So there was an environmental conference recently, and John Kerry got presented a bill by South Africa, said, okay, the Western world's going to pay for the developing world to clean up their energy grid, so we need $750 billion a year from the U.S. India, they've said their climate, to meet their climate change goals by 2030, they need about $2.5 trillion. That's equivalent to 1 year's GDP in India. So 12% of their GDP is going to go to clean energy? I don't think so. That's just not going to happen. They can't afford that in places like India. Europe right now, you know, this impact of the imbalances, if you look at what's happening in Europe, they shut down their coal energy plant, their coal electric plants. They bet on wind. Wind isn't blowing as much as they thought. There's a huge energy shortage. And now this winter, we're going to see natural gas and gasoline at 3 to 5 times the price they were last year. How is the consumer going to react to that? That's going to be a big political hit, believe me. Biomethane, really, really important. If you look at this, is global greenhouse gas emissions. And so there's road transportation. It's about 12%. So it's higher than that in the U.S. because we've got more vehicles, but globally it's about 12%. So yeah, it's a big part of the emissions reduction, and it's a good target. But if you also look at the sources of greenhouse gases that are based on methane, so, you know, manure rotting in the fields or wastewater, even things like fugitive emissions, you know, the our natural gas emissions from the pipelines and so on, collectively they add up to about 18% of greenhouse gas emissions. So it is critical to capture these sources of methane. And when you do that and transport, you know, using that to repurpose, to power transportation, particularly heavy-duty transportation that's hard to electrify. That's a really good way to make a big impact on decarbonization. So reducing methane is huge, and really pleased to see that, you know, the administration in the U.S. is really onto that, and there's been this recent, you know, pledge to reduce methane emissions by 30% that the U.S. and the European Union have agreed to. So this is really, really important. And what we've said at NGV America, you know, today 53% of the natural gas is renewable across the U.S. and California is 92, and in fact, it's now over 100%. We're actually negative carbon in California, and really, if you think about, you know, using it as a motor fuel, particularly heavy duty, is the highest and best use for renewable natural gas. It's the hardest, you know, heavy duty trucks and are probably the hardest to electrify. So let's use the RNG there. And our pledge that NGV has made is we want to try to have our natural gas for motor fuel be 80% renewable across the country by 2030 and 100% renewable by 2050, hopefully sooner than that. Because when we do that, now we're competitive on this sort of decarbonization benefit with electric. In fact, we're far better because electric is really how quickly can you green the grid, and, you know, it's still got a lot of coal that's going to be there for some time. So let's look at a different scenario. Let's just assume the blue line is the electric vehicle adoption that we talked about before. Let's just assume that electric does work out, but it's delayed a bit because they're just not ready. So in the meantime, let's really put our shoulder into natural gas. And in this scenario, and there's lots of scenarios you can do, this is just the one I picked. Let's assume we took natural gas up to 40 or 50% of transportation within 5 years. The products are ready. We're ready. Let's just do that. So let's put our shoulder into that. And then once we get to past 2030, you know, we'll have a fight between natural gas, RNG, and electric to who was win. And in this scenario, I said, okay, well, maybe it is 80% electric. We're still 20% natural gas. What does that look like? Well, I showed before, if we just had electric vehicles, here's how quickly the adoption happens. If you add this new slide in, or this new scenario, what happens is you've got natural gas growing, you've got electric growing, you've got diesel coming down faster. So we're out of diesel 5 years sooner. And we've got a mix of electric vehicles and natural gas vehicles, and they're going to be competing for, you know, who can do the job best. And then your greenhouse gas reduction. So this is what it was when we just did the EVs that followed that original EV curve. If you add natural gas, particularly, and I'm using 50% RNG now, going to 100% by 2050, here's what happens. The curve is a lot steeper. So the impact is this. So in the EV-only scenario, in 2030, you've had a 10% reduction in greenhouse gases. If you add natural gas in, it's 25%. By 2035, instead of 28, it's 57. And by 2041, we're almost there. So when we talk to regulators and we talk to the people that are, it's very hard to convert someone off of their EV mandate. It's like trying to, you know, talk sense to an anti-vaxxer or whatever you want to say these days. People are very wedded to their beliefs. But this is, why don't we do this on top of electric? And frankly, I have all the confidence in the world that if we get started on this and we get the support we need, electric will have a hard time, and RNG will be the answer for heavy-duty trucking. But why not do both, and why not follow a path like this? What's wrong with, you know, getting there faster using two technologies instead of just betting on one? We check all the boxes today. We're ready today. We've got great products. We've got, you know, infrastructure in place. We're scalable. It's everything we need is there today with RNG. I'm going to talk really briefly about hydrogen because I was asked to. We have a panel on hydrogen, but you know, when you look at all the research, there's all sorts of discussion about hydrogen and all the places it might be used and so on. I really think that we're going to see a lot of news on hydrogen in the coming years. It's really quite uncertain, you know, how it's going to play out. There's this whole big battle against, you know, is it blue hydrogen, in other words, you know, steam methane reformed with carbon capture versus, you know, green, which is really electrolysis. If you look at how much energy it takes to make electrolyzed hydrogen, it's a lot. We just don't know how that is going to work out. But certainly we're seeing that as the scale goes up, the cost will come down. That's very clear. The SMR plus carbon capture is a really good pathway for natural gas down the road. You know, keeps the natural gas reserves. I talked to an energy company, you know, sitting on lakes of natural gas, and they really see that SMR plus carbon capture is a way for them to have a viable product for decades to come. We'll see lots of advances in fuel cells. And the exciting thing, and you hear about it a little bit, is we're also seeing hydrogen internal combustion engines. And so we don't need to have fuel cells, which have the same issue as batteries. You need a ton of palladium and stuff like that. We're going to have hydrogen internal combustion engines very soon that will run just like the natural gas or diesel ones do today. And that's something that could really be a game changer in heavy duty trucking. So let me just close by saying, what is it that we need to do as an industry, as an organization? Really, we need to make our message to the regulators and lawmakers a lot stronger. A single solution is not the answer. We can't put all our eggs in an electric basket. We need all the solutions. You know, if you think about all electric, it's very uncertain. It's high. We know it's high cost. We know it's high risk. And all these known issues like full life cycle emissions or the impact of the resource extraction are really being ignored. And they can't be ignored. We should not be, or government should not be, forcing expensive and unproven technologies on the trucking industry. We need our trucking industry to step up and say, stop. Don't make us buy these things that don't make sense and cost three times as much. That's not the government's job to force that. Clearly, reduction of methane is a critical part, and we're ready now with RNG to accelerate decarbonization and provide an alternative if the electric options don't work out the way the regulators think they will. That's our role. We need to increase our voice. We need more fleets to come to this table, and I'm very seriously, don't allow the government to choose your trucks. That's not their role. They shouldn't be doing that, and so back off and let industry and innovation figure out, you know, how we reduce carbon. And amongst us, keep investing. We've got newer and better products. You're going to hear about some new products in the engine side. We've got lots of innovation happening. We've got lots of infrastructure being built. So we got to keep at it, because I'm convinced that as we look out over this 2020 to 2030, 40, and 50, RNG and natural gas is going to be a really key part of our transportation infrastructure, and it's a good bet for all of us. Thank you very much.
Thank you to NGV America Chair Jim Arthurs for sharing those thoughts, and to you, our listeners, for tuning in. To find out more about our recent NGV 21 program, go to our annual show's website at ngvshow.com. For more information on NGV America, visit our website at ngvamerica.org. There you can sign up for our weekly newsletter. Share comments with us on today's podcast via email at info@ngvamerica.org, and be sure to follow us on all your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. On behalf of Jim Arthurs, our board of directors, and the entire NGV America team, I'm Dan Gage. Thanks again for joining us. You just experienced the Fast Fill. Until next time.